Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Busby Babe podcast. I'm Nathan Heinchel, staff writer for the Busby Babe, filling in for Colin this week, who wasn't able to record. Joining me on the pod, so that way I'm not by myself for a second week in a row, is one of our newest writers, Polly Questel. Polly, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm a little bored that we're actually playing well going into an international break, and you know there wasn't a lot of fake outrage to get me through Monday and Tuesday. It was all, everybody was just like, hey, we won again, cool, and then you got to wait for the boring internationals to come.
Hey man, that's, you know what, that's the fun of the season though. We get to deal with the roller coaster because of course I recorded the pod 2 weeks ago, literally right before the Bournemouth game, predicted a 2-0 win, and by the time we got the podcast uploaded, Josh King had already scored and we ended up losing that match 1-0. And we thought the sky was falling again after going 4-0. So, you know, that's just Manchester United football this year. But we'll get into it. We got a pretty good show for you guys today. We're going to recap the last two games, both the Europa League match against Partizan as well as the league match against Brighton. And then we're going to do a little bit of housekeeping because, as we alluded to earlier, it is the international break. So hopefully news stays quiet. Certainly don't need any guys getting injured while taking care of their international duties. So starting off, Pauly, we had the Manchester United Partizan match in the midweek on Thursday. Manchester United won 3-0. A much better performance after what I called a smash and grab in the recap when they barely beat Partizan 1-0. So just what were your thoughts from that performance, seeing us get that victory at home?
I thought it was just a taking care of business performance, and my friends call it the get right in Europe games, when you know you're struggling a bit at home domestically, you play some inferior competition in Europe, you get a nice win under your belt, and you're able to take that form back into the league. Partizan are who they are. They, you know, the Serbian league is obviously not as good as the Premier League, and as wherever they are in the table, which is not at the top, I think they're somewhere around fourth. They are not nearly as good as the bottom teams in England. And for United, it was just very important. Go out there, beat them, and beat them thoroughly. You know, we have, as you said, alluded to the roller coaster, the overreacting fan base that just watched, you know, in the earlier times, AZ Alkmaar thrash Astana, that if we only got a 1-0 victory there, it would have set off some people still, you know, saying, oh, things aren't good. So it was important just go out there, take care of business, and that's what they did. It was 3-0, and frankly that was flattering to Partizan.
Yeah, and you know what, that was kind of my feeling as well. At the end of the day, they just needed a real tidy performance. After having a good run of form, that Bournemouth match I think left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. And I think the lads knew exactly what they needed to do. They had to take care of business at home and get ready for the weekend.
Yeah, and important to like secure qualification because, you know, I don't care whether we finish top of the group or second in the group. Obviously, top of the group has its advantages. The last time we were in the Europa League and we won it, we finished second in the group. I would rather secure that qualification so that no important player needs to even board that plane to go to Kazakhstan, because I'd probably do without the 11-hour flight before coming back to face Aston Villa.
Yeah, and Colin and I have had this chat before too. I kind of boo-hoo the European players that complain about flight times, being an American and knowing what we have to deal with. But we had that as a bullet point, the importance of qualifying for the knockout rounds this early. I think we're on the same page there. It'll give Ali a chance to play the youth, which almost feels like a weird phrase to say after we just sported the youngest youth team, or the youngest team for a Premier League start against Brighton. But it'll give a chance for him to, you know, give Jimmy Garner another performance, let Brandon Williams flourish again, and, you know, fingers crossed that we don't have any injuries.
To me, it's almost the opposite. Well, yes, I would like him to play the youth. I unfortunately don't think he will. I still think too many first teamers, whether they play in that game or not, are going to spend 22 hours on a plane. Don't let Brandon Williams play in that game. Let Ashley Young play in that game. Let Brandon Williams take the field against Aston Villa. I think one of my most disappointing things about the international break right now was because Young got suspended in the league, we got Williams off of that Europa League schedule. I think he's still too young to play every game, so twice a week. So by getting him off that Europa League schedule, now he's playing in the league. You get a midweek game, you know, that's when you bring in Young. And now the international break gives Ollie the chance or the excuse to, you know, reset things and put Young back in there for the league and Williams back in there for the cups. And that's not what I want.
All right. And then piggybacking off the Partizan match as well, you had a piece that you had wrote for the Busby Babe, discussing both Greenwood and Juan Mata's performances in that match. Of course, Greenwood scoring the opening goal, rather tidy finish from him, something that you'd love to see inside the box. But I think one of the bigger takeaways that you had from that article was Juan Mata's performance, especially playing in the number 10 role, a position that is definitely not solidified in the depth chart right now. With both Paul Pogba being out, Jesse Lingard not being in any short of form really, and then Juan Mata having the opportunity to step up. It's kind of been Juan or Andreas Pereira. It almost feels like a flip of the coin. One of them's, you know, good for a good performance or potentially even a bad performance. So what did you take away from that match and Mata's performance at the number 10 in the midweek?
I thought he does what a number 10 has to do. And not just that, but he really allows the other players to shine in that his movement, you know, Juan Mata, one of the things about him has always been his off the ball movement, how he makes runs that other people don't, which either gets defenses moving so you could play him in behind, or it just, you know, it's a dummy run that pulls the defender away and creates space for other people. He can make that pass that unlocks a defense. But also he could shift out and be effective from the right side. And when you play with somebody like Mason Greenwood, who is a natural striker, who can play on the right side, but his natural tendency is to drift in and get central, even without the ball. And even without him realizing that he's doing it, it's very good to have somebody that can go out and recognize that Greenwood's coming inside and, you know, we shouldn't have two guys standing on top of each other, and I'm going to go fill in that space for Greenwood and be in an area where you could still be effective. Having said all that, it's, you know, it's Partizan. Juan Mata should look dominant against Partizan. He needs to take that into the league. And it's the same, you know, he's old. He's on late legs. He's already struggled to play 90 minutes, you know, in the last few years. So, just like Brandon Williams, it's like when you have him on that Thursday schedule, I don't think you can run him back so quickly on Sunday that it's hard. And if you have to do that, it's going to affect his game and he's not going to look as good in the Premier League. So I think that's the challenge right now. And I think he would be the best option. He is not the best option at number 10 every game. And I think what Ollie needs to recognize is a game like not Brighton, but a game like Newcastle or Crystal Palace or Villa, where the opposition is going to sit back and you don't need to press them as much, is the game for Juan Mata. A game like Brighton, where the opposition is actually going to come at you, or Norwich, where they're going to come at you and really try, you know, that's where Pereira is going to be much better and shine.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that would be kind of the arguing point between choosing a Pereira and a Lingard versus a Mata is I think pace is really what it comes down to. As you said, Mata's legs isn't under him like they used to be. I mean, I don't think that Juan Mata was ever known to be the fastest player in the world either.
But I think people made him out to be slower than he actually was.
Right. Yeah. And I see where you're coming from. And I like the idea of, right now, United's playing a lot of matches where they're going up against almost a 10-man defense. There's a lot of teams in the league because, frankly, United hasn't shown any creativity as far as unlocking a defense. So they're more than happy to just sit back and bunker in. So I like where you're coming from with the idea of Juan Mata, because at this point, he's probably our best available distributor, especially with Paul Pogba being hurt. It definitely has a creativity. He doesn't need to necessarily have the legs to press a defensive mid who is trying to play the ball up because they're not going to be in a situation where they're really trying to press the ball up. So I like where you're coming from there. It's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, too, that we asked a question that after Mata plays a good match against Partizan, Pereira, I think, played pretty well against Brighton, especially after he scored that goal. I think he really grew into the game. So it's certainly encouraging to see that United has potentially two options at number 10 and two guys that bring different looks, too. So that way they don't seem so uniform on any given week.
That's interesting. Admittedly, I have a bit of a bias against Pereira, which affects how I watch the game with him. But when I do watch it back the second time, I watch it with a much more open eye. And I still didn't think, you know, he was that great. Right off the bat on Sunday, I noticed, you know, all the things that I said I liked about Mata, his ability to interchange, Pereira just doesn't seem to do. And it just seems he's very dead set on staying down the middle and not filling in with people, not crisscrossing with people, you know, not interchanging down the right side. There's an element that with Mason Greenwood, you want that because Greenwood is, like I said, a natural striker who wants to drift inside. Dan James is more of a natural winger who you want to stay on the outside. And then the other thing is early on in the game, United had a good break. Rashford played a good ball to Pereira, who got into the box and just he never shot. He lost the ball immediately. And that's the other very good part of Juan Mata's game is, you know, he came up at the same time as Santi Cazorla and some other, you know, Spanish skill guys who were very good creators. And while Cazorla was more of a passer, Juan Mata always had a good nose for goal and was very good at making that late run into the box and being a big time goal threat. And I think that's what United really need and what Pereira lacks. So, you know, when they get the ball down and Rashford gets it in, you know, beats his man onto the down to the touchline or James does it from the right, they lack that number 10 who, you know, makes that late run that allows you to pull it back and becomes that threat. When they pull it back to Pereira, it just seems like he either loses the ball or shoots it hellishly wide.
Yeah, and I think to a certain degree with Andreas Pereira, I think it's just a lack of maturity in his game. It's something that he has to continue growing into. And I think that's what's beneficial about having a guy like Juan Mata still on the squad. It's the same reason why I continue to kind of pine for the return of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I think it's important to have some kind of veteran presence at each of the areas where they can, you know, provide that savviness to guys that are otherwise relying on raw talents. Certainly you would think Andreas Pereira, as he continues to grow into himself and gets more confident, maybe even under the tutelage of Juan Mata, you know, he's not in a situation where he gets the ball all the way up to the box, is doing all these great step overs, but still fails to recognize that Anthony Martial is off to his left in a position, in a much better position. He just got lucky enough where the ball still managed to fall to Martial, who could then set him up for the goal scoring opportunity.
Right. I mean, I described it as the luckiest, most Andreas Pereira goal. Only Andreas Pereira could score a goal that involved two step overs, losing the ball, getting it back, and then getting like a nasty deflection.
Yeah. Well, and like we said, it's something that we hope he continues to grow into. He certainly scored the goal of the year last year. So I don't think anybody's confusing Pereira for being talentless. I think it's just a matter of having that game recognition as he just gets a little bit older, a little more wise.
Right.
In his play.
Yeah. I think my thing is, you know, when he's got the number 10 is I want my number 10 to be known for, you know, skills that a number 10 possesses. That ability to pass, that ability to create, that ability to score, and not his work rate and his ability to press.
Right. Well, and of course, we'll give a shout out then to our usual full-time podcast host, Colin Dams, who continuously screams for Paulo Dybala to join the team. And as we all almost thought we had this summer, he'd been great.
My Argentinian son.
Absolutely. All right. So after that Partizan match, we'll move on then to the league fixture against, as they were, I don't know if mockingly called, Bayern Hove Albion after they had an impressive win against Tottenham earlier this season. But certainly, I don't know that you could have called the Seagulls a layup victory for United. Certainly not the way United's been playing. Instead, they decided to prove everybody right and managed to put a 3-1 scoreline up, and a rather tidy performance again at Old Trafford. United looked strong, good in possession. They were dangerous on the counterattack. It was one of the most comprehensive attacking performances I've seen in a while. It was kind of, you know, your prototypical Ollie ball system that you'd be looking for. So with all that being said, Pauly, kind of how did you perceive the match?
It went as I expected it to. I, like you said, it's hard to say, to look at any team the way that United are playing this year and say, well, that's 3 points in the bag. But I look at Newcastle and I go, that's going to be a tough game because they're going to sit back and they're going to expose the problem that we all know that we have. Brighton don't play like that. You know, Brighton are a team that take pride in. We're going to go for broke. We're going to try to win this game. We're not going to come into Old Trafford and be intimidated. And it's like, perfect. That's what we want you to do, because like you said, you know, we're able to just hit you on the break, carve you open. We got the Andreas goal, which, as we just pointed out, was lucky early. But at this point this season, I will take any goal that we get. And great that we got that goal. It's going to open Brighton up. We scored on a set piece, which we hadn't done in months. And suddenly you get confidence. And what was really impressive was after we went up 2-0, we did settle down into like we're in control of this game mode, to the point that the game, I remember in the 40-something minute turning to the person at the bar next to me and being like, this, I've been just as checked out as this team for the last 15 minutes. I don't remember what's happened in the last 15 minutes because nothing's happened. And Brighton came out better in the second half and they got that goal. And for a young team, it's very easy to, you know, not so much lose your cool, but to be like, oh, it's fine, we still have one more, and just, you know, keep doing what we're doing. And you end up losing that lead. This team responded like the old Manchester United and a veteran group. They went out and all of a sudden opened up their best play of the game. And they scored that goal right afterwards and should have had 3-4 more. It's, you know, it's just been the same story all year. The finishing has been unclinical, to say the least.
Yeah, and that set piece goal that Brighton scored to take it down to 2-1, What I think was really positive to see was that goal in particular was more of smelling salts as opposed to a gut punch. And reinvigorated United. And they found themselves in a situation where they could really take advantage of how they wanted to play versus the opponent that they were playing. Brighton, when they start to open up, they want to play almost a 4-2-2. Graham Potter's got a system where they really like to play it up the center and they want to move it fast. And it really opens up space for United, who, frankly, most of their talent is on their wings. Having that space open on the right side where Daniel James just had acres and acres of space to just run. And, you know, there was all kinds of balls that were getting passed right up the center, right down Main Street, to the likes of Martial, who's playing great as a holding number nine and a target man. And his assist tally showed just how effective he was in that position. So would you say by your measure, I feel like we've been kind of using that 4-0 victory against Chelsea on opening day as the measuring stick. Would you say that this was maybe the best performance that United's had? Or does it compare it to something else, like maybe the 3-1 victory against Norwich?
I'd probably say the 3-1 against Norwich was better. The finishing in both those games was left a lot to be desired. Missing two penalties against Norwich never is bad, but again, if you're gonna miss two penalties, that's the game to do it. This game, towards the end of it, they turned it on a bit more, but it's easily this game and Norwich were the two best performances against Chelsea of the season. We know that 4-0 against Chelsea was a bit flattering, and you know, if you remember before when United got that penalty against Chelsea to go up 1-0, it was completely against the run of play. And Chelsea really dominated the first 15 or so minutes of that game. Tammy Abraham hit the bar. I think somebody else hit the bar. So top to bottom, not the best performance. A lot of positives in that performance. But I think these games against Norwich and Brighton were far better. Granted, again, they're Norwich and Brighton. They're not they're not Chelsea or Leicester or Liverpool, teams at the top of the table, but at least we're beating them, which, you know, a month ago we weren't beating the teams down at the bottom of the table.
Well, and what's so funny when you juxtapose maybe these last 2-3-1 victories that United have had against the likes of Norwich and Brighton and compare it to the 4-0 victory against Chelsea, I think for the most part people would say just in the run of play, Chelsea definitely outperformed United, but United had just a ridiculous day of finishing. Whereas on the other day, on these other matches against Brighton and Norwich, you know, United honestly should have scored 5 and 6 goals in each of those matches. And so it's kind of interesting how their best finishing match was against maybe their one of their worst performances in open play versus one, you know, two of their best games, and they can't seem to find the back of the net as much as they probably should have. Something I want to, I kind of touched on in the last podcast, something I want to bring up again. Of course, with the scoreline, Manchester United did give up that goal to Brighton. And unfortunately, with the Partizan match, you know, withstanding, United's really struggling to keep clean sheets right now. And they spent a lot of money on the defense again this season or this offseason, bringing in Harry Maguire, bringing in Aaron Wan-Bissaka. For the most part, I think everyone is a little bit, they feel calmer. You know, I don't know that there's that wild card in there like last season when we're playing Phil Jones out of necessity and you don't know what you're going to get. I think everyone feels a little bit steadier with the defensive situation. However, the defense is still leaking goals like it did last season. What do you think has been the cause of that? Is it just the new partnership? They're still working out the kinks, or do you think it's more systemic?
No, I think it's bad luck. The difference between last year and this year was last year, Mourinho's system had us sitting deep and defending from the back, which invites pressure onto you. And most of the, you know, yeah, Harry Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka have come in, but the rest of the players are all pretty much the same. Solskjaer's system has us defending higher up the field so that, you know, you don't, the other team doesn't get close to goal as often. And statistically speaking, we have the best defense in the league. We give up the fewest chances against us. We give up low quality chances against us. They're just going in at a ridiculous rate. I mean, Ruben Neves hits a worldie. You know, Lindelof gets beaten in the air against Crystal Palace, and Maguire's out of position, and they go one-on-one with De Gea and finish. Tonzebi just kicks the ball right to Aubameyang against Arsenal. McTominay turns it over against Norwich, and they put it, teams are getting one chance a game, and they're finishing it. This one was a set piece, which we still struggle to defend. It's, you know, we should have conceded the fewest amount of goals in the league because we just don't give up chances. And you're right, we are struggling to keep clean sheets. We haven't conceded a goal in Europe, and which is the Europa League, and it says a lot about the quality of play, because it's not like we're playing our first team defense in there. We've used Dalot, we've used Rojo, we've used Jones, we've used every defender that we have has gotten a chance to play in Europe, bar Luke Shaw. So I just think it's bad luck, and eventually it's going to reverse itself. I mean, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is essentially the Darrell Revis in his prime right back. Is United don't give him any help. They just say you go one-on-one with the opposition's winger, and he shuts them down every time. It's such an advantage to have that. I think just down the middle, it comes down to Maguire having to do too much, which creates some issues, but really they're not giving up chances. I really think it ultimately comes down to just bad luck and insanely good finishing from the opposition.
All right, so what you're saying is you're thinking if everything stays about the same, eventually water's just going to find its level.
Exactly.
Okay, and I certainly like the sound of that. I was probably leaning towards that a little bit as well. It to a certain degree, I was wondering, you know, maybe the back line was good. The problem that we're running into is, you know, United can struggle to maintain possession in the midfield. Every other game, you know, we have a dominant holding midfielder, and then there's other games where we don't. And so you always want to make sure that if the system's right and, you know, things are working, then eventually things are going to work out.
Right. And it's just playing with fire with a team that doesn't create a lot of shots and doesn't have that clinical finishing. Is if you only create 3 chances in a game and you don't score them, yeah, your defense is great. And in theory, if you're not giving up any chances, you shouldn't concede any goals. And then at the very least, you can't lose. But sometimes something goes wrong, like Matty Longstaff doesn't even take a great shot. He just takes the right shot and it goes in, and suddenly it's just playing with fire. So I think the defense is fine and it'll sort itself out. And what needs to be worked on right now is the attack.
All right. And as far as the putting a bow on the Manchester United Brighton match, who was your man of the match for that?
Fred. Without question, Fred has finally stepped into the role. I think he's finally understands his role, and we found the role for him. He is really learning it and doing such a great job. He's never going – I think when you come with a £52 million price tag and you come from the Ukraine, no one knew what to expect of him. No one knew who he was. No one watched him play. And anybody that tells you that they did is lying to you. And when you come with a £52 million price tag, people expect goals. And he had scored, I think, 3 the year before. He's not that kind of player. And he's not a Roy Keane either. He's not going to go in there and be a hard, rugged midfielder. He's signed to replace Michael Carrick. And when he was signed, there was the Mourinho Pogba thing that was starting to brew and the media was making noise about it. And they said maybe Fred was brought in to replace him. He was brought in to replace Carrick, who was also not a physical midfielder, just read the game really well. And Fred is getting better at that. He's found his role as the number 6. You know, he's not going to make the hard tackle, but he's found his role and he's starting to get the ball and get it out quickly. And he's really taking off there. And it's great, because maybe he's not going to be the best midfielder of all time, but when everybody's healthy, we have guys that we could rotate through and we don't have to play the same 2 guys every single game. And that's going to be tremendous for us in the second half of the season.
Well, that's certainly positive to hear. When we had done our player reviews at the end of last season, I had contributed to the Fred one, and I kind of felt like, based off of last season's performance, kind of his ceiling would be, you know, a guy that he doesn't necessarily start week in and week out, but for the most part, he's going to get you gritty minutes, box to box. And it was really taking a turn for the worse there. I believe it was the, AZ Alkmaar game, when they finished 0-0. We had definitely singled out Fred for his performance. I know I was very, very critical in my 3 things that we learned. Of course, to a certain degree, too, you can maybe pass some of the blame off of Fred because he played with Nemanja Matic in that game versus our world-beating midfielder, Scott McTominay.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. You know, last year, all the criticism that he got last year was deserved. I thought he played okay against PSG when he had to play because Solskjaer had nobody else. I thought he played very well against Manchester City last year in terms of winning the ball back, being a defensive midfielder. The issue was he won the ball back and he passed it to a blue shirt. And this year he stepped in and he played very well in those 20 minutes against Leicester. And we played him, I believe, against Astana the following Thursday. And he was pretty good again. And then he came on off the bench against West Ham and he was terrible. And he played against AZ Alkmaar and he was terrible. And against Newcastle, he was terrible. But I think since that Newcastle match, he's really learned the role and really understands what Solskjaer is asking him to do. And the improvement since then, playing against Liverpool and every game thereafter, has been steady. Is it a false dawn with Fred? We've had false dawns before, maybe, but at least right now it's being consistent and he's getting better and better every game and he's not regressing, which is a very positive sign.
Yeah, it certainly seems like he's finding his form. It was only October 4th that I wrote the words, Thanks to a shockingly new level of poor passing, Fred should be legally compelled to pay back everyone who had to watch the match on pay-per-view. I don't know how much Fred makes in wages per week, but I'm supremely confident that United will be on the hook for a portion of it when Fred eventually moves to Serie A. So I'm very glad to hear that Fred's starting to turn things around and making it your man of the match.
I mean, yeah, and I'll say, like I said, all the criticism he got last year was deserved. And the only reason that I said don't give up on Fred is because, you know, there's a long list of people that it took them a year to adapt to England. And if you give up on them, they come back to bite you. And I was like, but that's really the only thing I got. You know, that's not a lot of room to stand on. But I just said, you know, let's not convict him just yet. Let's give him another year. And so far, that time has paid off. And it's just like Solskjaer, you know, you keep giving him, he says he needs time, he's giving him time, and there's evidence now in the squad that his system is taking hold.
All right, well, we'll end this first set of segments then on some praise for Fred after he had certainly gotten a lot of stick over the last couple weeks. So we're going to take a quick second to pay the bills, and we will be right back with some segments pertaining to the international break. And welcome back to the Busby Bay podcast. Nathan Heinzel here, filling in for Colin, joined once again by Polly Questel. We talked about the Partizan match as well as the Brighton match. Now we're going to take a look at a couple other things, do some housekeeping here. So first thing I want to talk about, Polly, is looking at the table right now, Manchester United, seventh. Much better than the relegation battle we almost found ourselves in about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But right now, looking at the table, United are 18 points off of first place Liverpool, 10 points off of second place Leicester City. From what you've seen so far this season, the roller coaster that I think everybody's been on, do you feel as though Manchester United has a chance to finish top four? Do you think Ollie's the guy that takes them top four? Or are there any caveats that you have to, you know, throw in there if you think United's going to earn a Champions League spot by the end of the season?
It's certainly possible. And it's certainly possible for Ollie to do it. Bringing somebody else in, I don't think will help in any way, shape, or form. This is the team that Ollie inherited. He's barely had a chance to make his mark on it. We've all, you know, the whole first half of the show, we're talking about, okay, well, Fred's getting better and Andreas is getting better. But frankly, if this was 6 weeks ago, we would have been talking about how Lingard's terrible right now. Pereira's terrible. Fred's terrible. No manager is going to inherit this squad and do much better. I do think they can finish top four because you get a good run of form and this table is so tight. And there is a bit of a gap between fourth and fifth. But the table's so tight, only the top four teams are now the only teams in the league that have won three matches in a row at any given time this season. In the last international break, it was Chelsea and Liverpool. That was the list. So there's inconsistency everywhere. City and Liverpool, forget them. They're going to take it to the top. Leicester right now look unstoppable, but I've always said the same thing about Leicester as about us is if they are thin, if they get an injury to the wrong player, be it Ndidi, Madison, Tielemans, Vardy, the way that we got injuries to Pogba and Martial, are they going to be able to maintain that pace without their top 11 guys? And are they going to be able to stay fit all season? It's a long season. They were like this a bit last year, and then the festive period hit them very hard, and it took them a while to recuperate from that. Meanwhile, traditionally, Manchester United is a team that doesn't hit their form until December. Now, again, that's an old history thing with a team that, you know, doesn't feature any of the same players that this team does. But maybe that can happen again. You know, we are looking at a position now where we're going to go into the busy part of the schedule where hopefully nothing changes with our current players, but the injured ones are going to be coming back. And all it takes is a good run of form, and the rest of the league will sort itself out. The league is so good that there's no easy game. People drop points at any time. City lost to Norwich. you saw what happened last year when Ollie took over is, you know, we just won a bunch of games on the bounce, and suddenly we were in fourth place before everything fell apart. It can happen.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting to look at Leicester with a team that has the squad depth that they have or lack thereof. They at least are going to benefit from that tough stretch of games where they are not playing in Europe, which certainly some of the other teams that United's going to be in competition with for top four is going to have to deal with. Definitely feels like Leicester's kind of that fly in the ointment right now in the top four. It last year, you know, it was Liverpool, City, and Tottenham. Those are your top three. And it was Chelsea, United, and Arsenal who are all battling at the very end for that top, that final place in the Champions League.
And they were almost, it almost looked like they were battling for who didn't want it the way that they finished.
Yeah. Don't remind me. I spent hours and hours trying to predict the rest of the Premier League season. I think I got everything wrong.
I just said with three games left, I said, if we win all three, we'll be in the Champions League. I said, trust me, Chelsea and Arsenal will drop enough points that we will be in the Champions League if we win our last three games. And it would have came to that. They did drop enough points. We just won none of them.
Yeah, it's almost like Scooby-Doo. Had it not been our meddling self-destruction,
yeah.
We would have got away with it. But yeah, that's certainly something that we're going to have to continue looking for. I don't know if Tottenham is going down the road of the final moments of Mourinho at United, and there's going to be a Pochettino explosion that just completely blows the whole thing up. But certainly they have the talent to make a run and get back into things. Chelsea's looking really, really strong. And I don't know if Arsenal ever figures out how to get out of its own way. It certainly has the attacking talent to make a run as well.
They have the talent. I can't see top. I always said our chances at top four all season were we need to stay fit, because if we stay fit, we have the squad that can compete. And it'll be more about what the other teams don't do. I saw Tottenham possibly having problems this year. I did not see them being this bad, but I don't see them picking themselves out of it. They look like a squad without a plan at this point. All their players are now saying that they want to run out their contracts and leave for free, which is going to blow up their entire transfer strategy. Arsenal have the attacking talent to do a lot. They don't have the defense to do it. And at this point, I always said, you know, what's going to happen when February comes around and they're playing for a lame duck manager? And that might even be sooner than February, because now Emery is in such hot water. I can't see either of those teams really invigorating and making a big run. It's more about we find our form and wait for either a Leicester injury to derail them, which in theory should happen at some point, or Chelsea also being really young and dealing with this, with all these games that a young team hasn't dealt with before, and not falling off a cliff, but just slowing down a bit.
Well, you know what, as someone who also works in for a team communication department and being a social media manager, I would just like to remind the Arsenal social media manager that we do keep receipts in our business. And just remember, you tweeted out Unai's at the wheel, and I just thought you guys should be reminded of that. So we'll wrap up this segment. Rest assured, fans, Paulie's guaranteed a top four finish. So take that, Lamps. I know you're feeling good, but we're coming for the spot. So the next thing I want to get to, and certainly you've got a brand new article that just hit the Busby Babe today. So for anybody who's not familiar with Paulie's writing, he's been doing a really good job of really getting into the nitty-gritty tactical analysis. And today he decided to take on a subject that I've certainly had my eye on, and most of the world has had their eye on, Marcus Rashford and his finishing. So frankly, what I'm going to do, Paulie, is I'm going to just ask you a simple question and clear the lane to let you drive home your point. What's up with Marcus Rashford?
He can't finish. It's bad. And that's always been the knock on him, so I'm not breaking any news here. But it's, you know, the two games that we just watched, Partizan and Brighton, I just felt like I was watching a highlight reel of missed Rashford chances. It started against Partizan when 6 minutes into the game, Wan-Bissaka plays that ball that is lucky to find Rashford, and he just smashes his laces through it, and it misses the post, and it's just like, you got to finish that. And he had a bunch of other chances that weren't as clear-cut as that, but good strikers finish those chances, or one of those chances. And then against Brighton, that miss on that beautiful Dan James cross where it was basically a tap in and he missed, and I believe he missed another one. It's bad. And I decided, let's actually run the numbers here. And, you know, he's converting 12% of his shots into goals, which is real bad, really bad. You know, I always thought Zlatan was overrated when he was at United, and he converted 13%, which is
blasphemy,
which is better. But also pretty bad. And you look around at the top strikers, and Sergio Aguero is usually around 16-17%, which is not at the top end. Harry Kane in his big season a few years ago was at 25%. That's elite level. Mohamed Salah was at 15 last year. He was at a bit higher, I believe 21% during his 31 goal season. Those are the numbers where you want to be. Anthony Martial typically is around 19%. He's one of the most efficient strikers. We need to get him more shots because he puts the ball in the net. But Rashford just needs to work on that finishing. And it's something Solskjaer said at the beginning of the season was, I want him and Martial to work on getting those dirty goals, those nitty gritty, just garbage goals that, you know, really help, that you have to have that striker poacher tendency to do. But Rashford, he's such a good player. He's so good at doing so many things. He can play as, you know, in this wide forward position and do so much for the team and help out defensively and transition on the break and be a creator. What's missing is you take that step from being a terrible finisher to just being an average one, and the goals will start flying in. And in how many games did he just miss chance after chance where United just needed one goal? All of a sudden now your attack becomes so much more potent, and United will fly. Their season is going to ride on. We know Martial and Rashford need to have big seasons. We know that they're going to have breakout seasons, and they are, but he needs to get better at that, and he needs to get better at it quick. He's 22. He's been in the league for around 4 years now. There's still time for him to hone that skill, but, you know, by 23, 24, it'll be what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was really under a microscope in the Brighton game, because his worst misses really came when United were pressing for that fourth goal, and everyone was expecting that fourth goal, and it just kept being like, oh, here it comes, oh. Like you just mentioned, my son Daniel James serving up just a beautiful ball after that run, and I honestly, that was a wide open shot. I'm pretty sure rec players are putting that thing in, and it just,
yeah, like Lukaku would have scored that goal accidentally.
Yeah, I mean, that ball was perfectly served up where Giasse Zardes could have hit it off the backside of his head, unwittingly.
I don't know if Daniel James is there yet that he could be getting that he can turn Zardes into a goal scorer.
Well, if there's anything my son can do, he could turn Zardes into a goal scorer. But yeah, I think that's what's so frustrating, because you see Rashford put in the work and every other part of his game, and then it's like you get to that last point and he just can't seem to finish the deal. To kind of get away from putting him in that situation where he's not necessarily finishing all those chances, do you like the idea of playing him more of an outside winger, or do you keep on with trying to play him more centrally?
I was always team Marcus Rashford is a striker, and Mourinho is not getting the best out of him by moving him out to the left. Then Solskjaer came in and he established this system. And when you look at what Martial does, which Lukaku could not do, Lukaku's first touch is just not good enough to play in this system. Is what Martial does with his back to goal and his ability to take one touch, settle the ball down and hit it out into space to James or to Rashford really takes this team off. and thrives. And when he was out, Rashford just could not play with his back to goal. So in this system, he can't be a center forward. The thing about him playing out wide is he doesn't really play as a winger per se. He really plays more like a second forward. That just comes from the left, and that is his absolute best position. I've always thought he may not be like a center forward, but he was more like the Wayne Rooney second striker guy when Rooney liked to play off the shoulder of Van Nistelrooy, and you know, when Rooney and Tevez would take turns being the center forward and but liked being the guy right behind him. And that position doesn't really exist anymore. And now Rashford's really doing a great job of being that guy just off from the left side. And that's where he's going to thrive.
All right. Yeah. And certainly I think what it's been almost a black and white thing, or, you know, just that juxtaposition too, the whole seeing how lethal Martial can be and how good he's looked coming off of injury. And we're seeing just how important he is. He's certainly been one of my favorite players, and it's glove season, baby. He's really starting to turn it on. And that was something I noticed too during the Brighton match. Comparatively to Lukaku, who was more of that bull in the china shop guy when he got into the box, Martial has a certain level of finesse that I think really just works so much better in Solskjaer's system. I mean, there was a ball that was placed, and Martial's draped by a guy, and he still settles it and then plays it off to the left and then megs the dude, the next guy that's stepping up on him, and then is able to get a shot off that was saved. But it was one where he was kind of falling away from the ball. He's shooting it with his left, but everything that led up to that, it shows, I think, that Martial really does have the ability to play that holding number nine position when the situation calls for it.
And I mean, I can rattle off a bunch off the top of my head. There was one against Partizan where it was a hard ball towards him, and he took it with his chest, right foot, left foot was a ball out into the channel for Rashford, who of course didn't finish. There was a play against Norwich. Pereira fires a hard ball to Martial, who's got his back to goal, one touch out into space to James. The first goal against the Pereira goal started with Fred firing a ball to Martial, who turned on it and got it out to Rashford to start the break. Rashford's goal against Norwich, same thing. Maguire to Martial, out wide to James. And even James's goal against Chelsea. Remember how that started with Martial coming towards the touchline, holding play up and flicking Pogba into space. It wasn't noticed so much until he wasn't there. And when he came back, it became so noticeable, probably because the rest of the team grew into the season and the system. And now they had somebody that could play that role.
Yeah, absolutely. No disrespect to my man, Scott McTominay, but I think if Manchester United make a top four finish, I think Martial is probably going to be the MVP and the chef that made all those ingredients work. Certainly I've been strutting around in my 2015-16 number nine Martial kit. I have not been hiding that one off.
Same. I was so happy that it came back into style this year.
I know, right?
Of course, it happened right after I bought my nephew a Martial number 11 one, but he's two. He won't know the difference.
Hey, you know what? He can admire the times with Martial, but even when he was held down, he could still turn it on. So speaking of my man, Scott McTominay, really unfortunate to pick up a knock in the third minute of 3 minutes of stoppage time against Brighton. I mean, literally at the last seconds of this game. Now it's being reported that he's going to be out for a month. Just off the cuff, what do you think that does for the team? What's the midfield looking like without Scotty McSauce?
Questionable is really the word. I think it comes – I'm just a little annoyed that we got Tottenham and City on deck, because otherwise I'd be in favor of this injury. Because look at the way the rest of the team is. Solskjaer wants Nemanja Matic not even on the Isle of Great Britain. And Pogba's injured. Fred's playing well right now. McTominay gets hurt. This is where you where you have no choice but to give James Garner minutes. And I think that's ultimately, you know, it's very hard for a youth player to break into the team when it's just like, hey, we'll give you minutes here and there. It's much easier when, you know, the manager says, we got no choice. And if you look at Marcus Rashford, it was, we have no choice but to play you against Midtjylland. He scored 2 goals. Then it's, well, we still have no choice but to play you against Arsenal, scored another 2 goals. And all of a sudden it was, wait, like, we're not taking you out of the team. You don't stop scoring. So I think injuries is really where youth guys get the chance to play. And so on one hand, I'm okay with this because it'll be Gardner's chance to shine, and it'll, you know, Villa and maybe Sheffield a bit more difficult than Villa, but give him a chance to settle into the team. If Solskjaer does go this direction, it's November, December at this point. If this would have happened in August, Gardner might not be ready. You know, he's 17, 18 years old. People are, you know, kids that age are still growing, and 3 months makes a huge difference in how they grow physically, that he may be more ready for the league now. And if he proves that, you know, in January and February, he'll become a valuable squad player and not just somebody who's sit on the bench, gain this experience, and you're only here in case of an emergency.
Well, we will certainly hold out hope for that. We're already watching another youth player for us, but in front of our eyes, Brandon Williams, who's really stepping up with Luke Shaw being hurt and Ashley Young being just absolute butt at soccer at this point. Really excited to see what Brandon Williams is doing.
Ashley Young gets so much hate.
I've certainly got backup on the Busby Babe side of things. If I know you're new to the Slack channel, but I'll tell you what, Brent Maximin is, he's got words for Ashley Young.
I'll be honest here. I was probably the number one Ashley Young hater for years and years and years. And then when I wanted my first trip to Old Trafford, I had a friend who had a friend who was Ashley Young's manager. So Ashley Young ended up giving me tickets, and I went and deleted every tweet I ever said about Ashley Young. Which was took a while, but in all honesty, no bias, Ashley Young is absolute, I'll use your words, he is absolute butt as a right back. As a left back, he is totally competent as a backup deputy who, like I said earlier in the show, let's play him in the Europa League. Let's give Brandon Williams the chance to shine in the Premier League. But, you know, if we have to play a game with Ashley Young at left back, it's not the end of the world. Ashley Young at right back, that's calamitous.
All right. Well, we got some love for Ashley Young on here. You know what? He does take a lot of stick, but at the end of the day, he has been an incredible servant for United too. And I think we lose perspective. It definitely feels like kind of towards the end of Rooney's playing career at United, when, you know, he's my favorite United player, and I might have made comments about how he's the prize show horse that needed to be taken out back and shot.
Yep.
So
yep. It'll be weird, like, in a year when we're watching the joint testimonial of Ashley Young and Phil Jones.
Yes, we will eventually find perspective and appreciation again for Ashley Young, because he has had moments where he's been incredibly important for the squad.
Yeah, or just watch that 8-2 game against Arsenal again.
Absolutely. And more importantly, let's keep our fingers crossed that Scott McTominay has a speedy recovery, healthy recovery. And in the interim, Jimmy Garner turns out to be the next N'Golo Kanté. Lastly, the last segment that we're going to finish things off on, because it's never too early to discuss the next transfer window. We are going into the international break right before the holidays start up. So the international break's going to be here before you know it. Hopefully Ed's already started some negotiations, because Lord knows he takes forever to do so. So Paulie, I'm going to ask you a question, and it's going to be, who is one guy that you think United can realistically bring in during the January window? I know we all have hopes that maybe an Erling Haaland for, you know, $130 million, maybe James Maddison. Leicester probably is valuing him at $200 million right now. So who's one guy you think realistically we could bring in a January window?
Realistically, I think we can get a deal done for Jadon Sancho, but it would be a sign and loan back a la Christian Pulisic. So that doesn't count, I guess. Who would actually come? I guess I'm going to cheat and say Mandzukic, because the reports are out there today that he's even trying to come in December and start training. I don't know how I feel about it. I could definitely tell you, as everybody says, oh, he's a proven goal scorer. He's not what you think he is. He's not a guy that scores 20 goals a year. He last scored 10 league goals in a season 4 years ago. But he could play with his back towards goal. And he can hold up play, and he can do the stuff that Martial does. And I think it's just a little confusing of a deal for me. He has to very much know his role. And if he does, I'm okay with it. He'll probably sign an 18-month contract, which I think is 12 months too long, because they probably will go after Erling Haaland in the summer. But for 6 months, I think it'd be good. You have to know his role, though. I don't want to see him come off the bench when we're chasing a goal. I'd rather still see Mason Greenwood. He just needs to be a straight backup for Martial. When Martial can't play, Mandzukic comes in, and this way, unlike when Rashford has to sub over for him, we're still able to play the same system. We have a guy who could play with his back towards goal. But don't expect him to come in and start pouring goals in. He'll probably score like four all season.
Yeah, I've been a little cautiously optimistic about Mandzukic, kind of for the reasons that you're saying. Don't bring him in. I think he would be a nice change of pace guy, potentially that break glass of a in case of emergency guy. Marouane Fellaini. It's like, oh my God, we've just got to get one in the back of the
right,
net. We're in Turin, get a goal.
I don't want to see us just start hoofing balls into the box. That's not the kind of team we are. And when you have only one guy who can go up there with his head, you know, the other team just puts their Harry Maguire on him, and the rest of the team's kind of screwed. Plus, we just don't have guys that could cross the ball. Dan James maybe, but the rest of the team cannot. So that's why I'd rather see, you know, I do understand sometimes when you're just like nothing's working and you want to see something different. But different would be like, let's put Greenwood on at the same time as James and Martial and Rashford, you know, take off Pereira, maybe take off one of your holding midfielders and really, you know, bring on Juan Mata to play as a deep midfielder to get that ball up the field faster. And the other thing to me is it comes out, he has to want to be here. You know, as much, you mentioned Paulo Dybala earlier in the show, and I said my Argentinian son, I love Paulo Dybala. I think he's amazing. But when he was offered to United and he just said, "Now I'll come if you give me 310 a week." You know, he didn't want to come. He wanted money. And at the end of last season, we made this whole big deal about we got to get rid of the Alexis Sanchez's, the players that are just here for a paycheck. We got to fix that. And when we went to work on fixing that, that meant getting rid of good players and Solskjaer's strategy of making sure that we're bringing in players that want to be here maybe means we don't take the guys that are just looking for money. And it's kind of pissed off the fan base, but I think it's the right idea. And I'm happy to take Mandzukic, but it has to be, he has to want to be here. He has to basically get the same deal that Juan Mata got. Like, I understand my role. I understand that I'm not going to play every day. I'm here to help the squad and to help the younger players learn.
Yeah. And I'm thinking probably for the amount of money it'll cost to get Mandzukic in the door, it feels like a safe bet, especially if the contract's not long-term. Cause at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have just that, just piss and rain outside, probably 40 degrees outside in Turf Moor, and is 0-0 in the 85th minute. And you just throw in Mandzukic, he starts throwing some bows in the box, and you know, he's got Sean Dyche all upset because now Burnley's down 1-0. And I think it's worth the cost for doing something like that. I certainly don't want to see him week in, week out, but I think he could be, you know, what Fernando Llorente was for Tottenham last year. Because Mandzukic does have a pedigree of scoring some big goals when he needs to as well. So hopefully we can maybe reinvigorate him just for a little bit longer if that's the guy that we do bring in. It certainly seems like that's going to be the case with the early reports. And we'll just cross our fingers for Erling Haaland being the next Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and we get him when he's 19.
But not Zlatan in the way that Zlatan moved clubs every 3 years. Like, you know, come in here and go after Rooney's record.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think if Ollie's going to be the guy, I think he's going to be the one that actually pushes that forward. But that's for another time. We've got plenty of months in between now and the summer window to discuss Erling Haaland. So we're going to wrap things up. Polly, first of all, I'd like to give you the floor here. If there's anything you need to, if you'd like to plug, social media handles, anything like that.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at PQuestel, which is PKWESTEL. I'm very entertaining in the morning when I wake up and I read the fire of everybody's takes and I quickly rattle off and respond to all of them early in the morning and go on rants. But otherwise, I think I'm a joy to listen to.
Excellent. And if you guys get a chance to, because of course you've got the Busby Babe bookmark, go on there, read Polly's new piece talking about Marcus Rashford's finishing ability. You got the abridged version here on the podcast. Now it's time to put your eyeballs to work and read the story. Also, be sure to check out Jack Sargent's Guide to the International Break. We've got a little bit of time before we go up against Sheffield United, so time to brush up on some things. Also, read Ben Lowry's newest feature, outlining United's best available lineup. Already a lot of comments on that article. I'm sure it's very juicy. And, of course, make sure that you are liking and commenting on all your articles. Be sure to like, review, and subscribe to the Busby Babe podcast. And while you're at it, too, you can give me a follow on Twitter at NathanIsRed. Currently, myself, I'm brainstorming some new features. I can feel our editor, Brent Maxman, staring a hole through my head in our Slack channel because I'm overdue for a new piece. So stay tuned for that. I predicted the three man at the back. So who knows what kind of prophetic words I'll put out next. But other than that, guys, enjoy your international break. Hope it's stress-free, and we will talk to you soon.